I don't know how many of you have ever read, or if you ever read, remember one of the most famous scenes in one of the most famous books in American literature, which is Mark Twain's Tom Sawyer, where he has Tom Sawyer whitewashing a fence, which is an unpleasant task and no one wants to do it, but Tom Sawyer pretends that he's so excited to be able to do it that other kids in the neighborhood start to look on, but he won't let them do it because it's too much fun. And eventually they ask and plead with him, and finally he lets them do it, and so they end up doing his job for him. Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, as you know, is like tax season for rabbis. So I thought this morning I would just let you give my sermon for me. I'm just going to start you off, and you can do the rest. Each week when I meet with the bar bat mitzvah of that week, if I'm conducting the bar bat mitzvah, there are a number of questions that I always ask them, but one of them that I always ask is, if you could change anything about yourself, what would you change? By the way, after that, I ask the opposite question. You know, I ask them to describe, tell me how their best friend would describe their traits, and that's usually the good stuff. But I always ask them what they would want to change. And I think that it's actually a revealing question, and you get sometimes wonderful answers from the kids. I'll let you guess what the most common one is, and then I'll tell you what the most common answer is from the B'nai Mitzvah. The most common is procrastination. That's the most common. Because you can hear their parents saying to them, have you done your homework yet? You can see the computer open in their room and they're watching God knows what when they should be doing their math homework. So that's the most common trait. But they give lots and lots of other answers, and I thought that today that would be an interesting thing to ask ourselves. So I'm going to start you with a trait or two of my own that if I could wave a magic wand, I would change. And then I hope you'll tell me some of yours. You don't have to go into details. I'm not asking you what you did that you would change. I'm asking you to think about the structure of your character. What is it that you would like to work on for the next year that you would like to change as a character trait? So I will give you one or two of mine to get you started, because it's not fair to just ask you and not say on my own. I've thought about this. One of the things, I mean, apart from like all the negative traits that you can think of, right, which we all possess, but I thought one of the things that I would like to have less of is I'd like to be less captured by the mood of the moment. That is, I'd like to keep in mind when I'm angry that later on I won't be angry. Or when I'm upset about something that the upset will pass. Or when I'm depressed that later on I'll be happy. And it's very hard to hold on to the reality of the mutability of our moods, of the fact that our moods change. And sometimes I wish I wasn't so sunk in the instant and I could in fact look past it. And the other is close to procrastination, which is focus. Wish I had more concentrated focus and was not so easily distracted by all the distractions of the world, from television to Facebook to computers to the phone to texting to all the things that you are so easy to do instead of whatever it is you're actually supposed to be doing. So those are at least a couple of the things that if I were working on my character, I would change for the year to come. Now, if you ever want to actually leave and have lunch today, you have to tell me some of yours. Go ahead. More wisdom from God, of God and from God. Okay, so we lament our lack of wisdom. What else? Yes. I want that one too. She said that she would like to have more of her old memory back so that she could remember everyone's name. I don't actually want my old memory back. I want someone else's old memory back. Because even when I remember when I was a kid, my parents used to say to me, you remember so-and-so or such-and-such, and I was always bad with names. But yes, memory is a good one. And memory is a funny thing because I'll remember a quote that I heard 20 years ago and not someone's name that I met yesterday. And I cannot figure out why. And I don't think it's a function of focus because sometimes I really try and yet it flies from my head. Yes, whatever your name is. No, Ellie. That's a good one. To live more in the moment because we're constantly projecting and thinking back. Do you know Robert Burns' wonderful poem, To a Field Mouse? The most famous line of it is translated into English, although it's not originally written in English, the best laid plans of mice and men go off astray. The way it reads in the original is gang aft aglay, that's the Scots, but it means go off astray. But this poem is all about his turning over with a rake, turning over some hay, and he sees a field mouse. And the field mouse is startled, but in the end of the poem, Burns talks about how he envies the field mouse because unlike the field mouse, he remembers the past and is upset by it and also projects into the future and is depressed by the future. So the poet envies the fact that the mouse can live. Actually, he may be scared at the moment, but he's only scared at the moment, and in a minute, he'll be fine. He'll run away, he'll be fine, whereas those shocks stay in our system. So living in the moment. Yes? No, that's not a trait of your character. Unless you've caused the war, I want to know what trait in your character you want to change. You're not allowed to escape into the general, I'd like peace in the world too, but it doesn't say anything about me. Okay, but now that you said something, you have to tell me, what would you like to change about you? Yes. Don't be angry. Anger is a big one. The rabbis talk a lot about anger. They say that anger is the most uncontrollable emotion, the hardest one to get right. The way they put it is that anger is like a seething cauldron. When it bubbles over, you never know who it's going to burn, right? So even though you think you're being appropriately angry, it's not the case. And anger is a tough one. Also because the anger from inside feels so different from being the recipient of the anger. It feels so different. So, yes? Impatience. So impatience in the sense that you can't wait for something, for other people to do what they need to do. You're impatient with yourself and you're impatient with others sometimes. So yeah, impatience is a big one. Other people have this really sometimes infuriating reluctance to work on our schedule. And so you can wait in your doctor's office forever. And yes, impatience is a big one because also we're educated to impatience. I mean, it's not just that things in our life work so quickly, so that if your computer doesn't pull up the website within 6 seconds, it seems like it's forever, right? It's forever. Or you text someone and you think, my God, I texted them 3 minutes ago. I don't understand why I haven't received a response already. This is crazy. What is it with them? So that's part of it. But also because unlike in medieval times or ancient times, we measure time so precisely. Did I ever tell you this story, and then I'll ask you what you want to change? I remember once Amos Funkenstein, who was a great scholar. He was a professor at the UC system. He was one of 10 university professors, which meant he could teach any class at any UC campus, any semester he wanted, right? And he also had an appointment at Tel Aviv simultaneously and used to fly back and forth and teach. The thing about Funkenstein was he was never close to on time. If you came to his office for a 3 o'clock appointment, he might stroll in at 5:30. And you just had to know that. You just had to know that, okay? Now, once he was there, by the way, he was so there and so charming and so learned that you didn't mind as much, but you had to know. So you always saw students sitting in front of his door, always. So once he asked me if I would drive him to the airport. So I was his student. I was honored to drive him. Of course, Professor Funkenstein, this is when I was working on an ill-fated PhD that I never finished. That's another trait. So I said, of course, I'd be happy to. So I show up, at his house, and of course, he's not there, he's not ready. He strolls out, we've got like 2 seconds to get to the airport. So I'm sweating, because I gotta get him there on time. He's completely indifferent. Time means nothing to this man. So on the way to the airport, he starts to give me a lecture about how until the invention in Germany in the 16th century of the counterpoise clock, nobody counted in minutes. Because with sundials, you can't count in minutes, not effectively anyway, so no one could ever be 5 minutes late. And isn't it remarkable that he might be 5 minutes late for the plane when, in fact, centuries ago, nobody could be 5 minutes late? It was a real education in different attitudes towards time, right? By the way, I received the same education, as some of you know, at Persian weddings. There I am, ready to go. It's 7 o'clock. And nobody's there. Not the bride, not the groom. The only one who's there is the photographer. It's me and the photographer for hours until someone shows up. But you live and you learn. Okay, yes. You were going to tell us a trait. Ego. Ego's a big one. Yes. When Moses says to Israel, I stood before you and God on that day, right? When he's talking about Mount Sinai, you know what the Kutzker Rebbe says? He says, the I stands between you and God. That's what Moses was teaching. Your ego stands between you and God. And I think we can all identify with that idea. Our needs, our ego, our desires, the insistence of what it is we want, we need, we have to do. That's a big one, and the root of many of the other traits that we've been talking about. Yes? Less perfectionist. I want to say something about perfectionism. Because remember when I started all this, I'm almost tempted to stop for a minute. Why don't we stop for a minute? Let everybody come in and have a seat. Why should you stand there? While you come in, I'll talk about perfectionism. So, what's that? To be punctual also, right. Yes. Hold it 1 second. Let me just say about perfectionism, and then Selma, I'll get to you. So a lot of the kids that I see in the bar and bat mitzvah program, their problem is, in fact, perfectionism, right? And I ask them if they're perfectionists, and they tell me that they are. And what I want to tell them, and what their parents should be telling them, is that it's very, very, very difficult on someone to be a perfectionist. Very hard. Not only is it hard, but also I want to remind you that to be a perfectionist is in its way to be very egotistical. Because why should you think that you can be perfect? Why aren't you subject to the same flaws as every other human being? Actually, there's another reason why you shouldn't have to worry about being perfect, because in the Jewish tradition, the job description for perfect is already filled. God gets to be perfect, but we don't. We don't. So you can give up perfectionism, because after all, you should also realize there's something else, and then I'll come to Selma. There's something else really important about perfectionism, and I think about this with sermons. Since I started this off confessionally, I will go back to it. A wise rabbi once said to me, and I think about when I give a sermon that I'm not happy with, and I walk away disgruntled, even if people say that was a good sermon and I think it wasn't a good sermon, I remember what this rabbi once said to me. He said to me, David, it is important to remember that other people think of you a lot less than you think they do. They're thinking about themselves just like you are thinking about yourself. And if you remember that, it helps loosen the perfectionism, because if you get up in front of a class, I tell kids this, and you give a presentation that's not good, and you think everybody's thinking about your terrible presentation, believe me, they're not. I tell bar mitzvah kids that too. If you make a mistake, people, A, probably won't notice, but if they notice, that's not what they're going to focus on. You can actually let it go, because the good thing is, other people aren't thinking about you. They're thinking about themselves, as they should be. But that means that a little bit you can release that constant sense that everybody, oh my God, I can't believe everybody noticed what I did. Selma. Yes. She said, did the plane wait for him, for the professor? No, it did not, but I managed to get him there on time. But he was going to San Francisco, so there would have been another plane. And there you are, never run for a bus. As Mel Brooks says, why? There'll always be another. Right. Yes. So you'd like to be more empathetic. You'd like to be able to feel more what other people are feeling. Depends who. Some people I'd rather not. Yeah. Aaron. I'm sorry. Hold it. Oh, I'm sorry. Back one and then the other. Go ahead. Be a better listener. You remember Joseph Epstein's wonderful line? He said, Jews don't listen, they wait. Sooner or later, this person will be finished and it'll be my turn to talk. Yes, go ahead. Full of?
Energy.
Yeah. Being tired, losing energy. But it depends. Is your lack of energy because of physical, you're just tired, you haven't slept enough or whatever, or is it attitude? Is it because you're upset or because some things you can change and some things you can't, right? Sometimes you have a lot. Do we have any dietitians in the, yes, go ahead. Might be your diet. Yes, please. Go ahead. Ah, don't let someone else's negativity affect you. Good luck with that. You might also, it depends who you surround yourself with, but other people's, you know, this is partly physiological. We have these mirror neurons, partly you reflect naturally. That's why human beings are such good imitators. Because what we see, from the time you can see this with little kids, what we see, we automatically do. And when someone is constantly negative, it's hard not to absorb that. That is true. Let's take one or two more. What else? Yes, Max. Patience. Patience. Patience is a hard one, right? Patience is definitely a hard one. We want the satisfaction right now, yeah. Be less sensitive. All right, I want to say something about that too. Yes and no. Again, let me go back to the B'nai Mitzvah when they tell me I'm too sensitive. What I would say is this. What we want in some ways is resilience, but not insensitivity. That is, you want to be able to feel it and to be able to stand it. But to wish to be less sensitive is to wish to experience the world less. You know that, right? That's what you're wishing for when you say, I wish I was less sensitive. That I would feel things less. And I don't know if that's something we necessarily want to wish for, as opposed to, I wish I would feel them, but they wouldn't hurt me as much, or I'd be able to tolerate them better, something like that. Because we all know insensitive people. You don't want to be like that, right? You want to be someone who feels the world, but can stand it. Which is a harder thing. Okay, let's take one more. Anybody else have one that has not been? Oh my God, yes, go ahead. Go ahead, in the back. Well, there are three in the back, so go ahead, say them all. Call it out loud, I can't hear you. I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you said. Can someone say it loud? Less intimidatable, okay, go ahead. We'll take three in front of you. Go ahead, Jackie. Ah, that's a really good one. Okay, I'll come to that. Intimidatable, accept people the way they are. Anyway. Okay, let's take those two. First of all, it's very hard not to be intimidated by people in general, especially by intimidating people. right? It's just hard. We all think we have courage until we get into the situation where we're intimidated. It's like the Milgram experiments, right? You all know those experiments, where Stanley Milgram had these people come in and administer shocks to other people. They weren't really getting shocks, but the people thought they were. And the guy in the white coat would say, give him a bigger shock and a bigger one and a bigger one. And all these people who would never hurt anyone, they kept giving these subjects bigger and bigger and bigger shocks because, after all, a guy in a white coat told them to. We're all capable of being intimidated, and the best way to not be intimidated is to know that you're capable of being intimidated and to try to fight internally against it and to have the most important single trait to lead a good life, I think. The most important single trait to lead a good life is courage, because without courage, you can't be who you are, right? It's only courage that allows you to express yourself as who you are, but it's very hard to develop. It's a lifetime job. And it is, by the way, as Harold Kushner points out, it's other than, in fact, maybe even including that, it's what God says more often than anything else in the Torah. Al tirah, don't be afraid. In other words, have courage. And then, what was the second part, Jackie? Accepting people for how they are. I don't know actually how much, you know, classically people said this was a gender difference, that men go into a marriage not changing and women go into a marriage determined to change men. The idea of accepting people as they are, I think, has to do in part with the ability to admit your own fallibility. Because we generally don't accept people the way they are because we think the way they are is wrong. Not that it's different from us, it's just wrong. It's wrong that you don't, whatever, like movies, like to stay home, like to go out, talk that much, don't talk that much, communicate more, communicate less, go dancing, are insulting to people, whatever it is, right? We put a moral judgment on it. The only thing that I would say is that life is a balance between making minor adjustments in the people around you, because everybody makes minor adjustments in the people around them, and surrounding yourself with people with whom you don't have to make major adjustments. Because my father, of blessed memory, when my older brother got married, this was the bit of advice he gave him. He said, listen, before you get married, I just want you to know one thing. Whatever it is that bothers you about your spouse will get worse. He said, so don't marry someone that you have to change. Marry someone whose faults you can live with, as opposed to marrying somebody who you assume you're supposed to change. Because it's a lot easier to tolerate that which you can tolerate than to change that which you cannot tolerate. Just think of it this way. How easy is it to change yourself? So if it's not easy to change yourself, how hard is it going to be to change someone else? And yet, sometimes it can be accomplished, and I'd like to give you a perfect illustration. Until this morning, you guys never gave the sermon. And yet, I changed you all. And this morning, you did. For which I thank you. Shabbat shalom.